Welcome and thank you for standing by for today's conference. All participants will be in listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session. At that time to ask a question, please press star 1. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the call to John Bateman. Sir, you may begin.
Good morning and thank you for joining this monthly's climate update call, part of the suite of climate services that NOAA provides to government, business, academia, and the public to support informed decision-making. I'm John Bateman with NOAA Communications, and I'll be facilitating the call today. One note about today's call, some server issues are making the presentation unavailable online. So for any of the participants out there that would like a copy of that presentation, please email me your email address, and I can send it to you during the presentation. That email address is nesdis.pa@noaa.gov, and I'll spell it for you twice, nesdis.pa@noaa.gov. One more time, nesdis.pa@noaa.gov, and then I will send you as soon as possible a copy of that presentation. With that, let me introduce our speakers. The first presenter is Karen Gleason, a climatologist with NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information, who will provide a summary of the November U.S. and Global Climate Report, as well as the latest drought monitor update. Our second presenter is Eric Blake, a hurricane specialist at NOAA's National Hurricane Center, who will provide a review of 2019's Atlantic hurricane season. And our third presenter is Brad Pugh, a meteorologist at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, who will provide the latest El Niño-La Niña update, as well as the monthly and seasonal temperature, precipitation, and drought outlooks for the next 3 months. Our first speaker will be Karen from NOAA.
Thank you, John, and welcome everyone to the call. Today I will summarize the November, the seasonal, and the year-to-date highlights for both the globe and the United States. So let's first begin with the globe on slide number 2. Looking at global temperature for the month of November 1st, which is the map on the left side of the slide, I wanted to explain a little bit about the colorings and the shadings. These are percentiles, so we take a look at the 140-year history of each of the grid boxes, and we compare the anomalies to its own history for each grid box. Anything shaded in blue is in the coolest tercile. Anything in the neutral color or the white color is near average or the middle tercile. And anything shaded in one of the three shades of red is in the warmest third of the 140-year distribution. All right, so looking at some of the more prominent features in the map, we see a large area of record warm conditions across the central and eastern Pacific, also across central and southern Africa, as well as the Mediterranean and western portions of the Indian Ocean. Looking at some of the blue shadings across the map, I wanted to note that there are no record coldest pixels or grid boxes on this particular map for November, but we do have some cooler than average temperatures and percentiles, primarily located in the central and eastern United States and southeastern Canada, as well as portions of Asia and just off the west coast of Indonesia. Looking regionally, we see that it was the warmest November for South America, Africa, and the Hawaiian region, and it was second warmest across the Caribbean region. On a whole, for global land and ocean, the average or the departure from average was 0.92 degrees Celsius or 1.66 degrees Fahrenheit from the long-term mean, and that is the second warmest November on record behind November of 2015. For global land only, the departure from average was 1.3 degrees Celsius or 2.34 degrees Fahrenheit, which translates to eighth warmest November on record for land. And looking at global oceans by themselves, the anomaly or the departure from average was 0.77 degrees Celsius or 1.39 degrees Fahrenheit from the long-term mean, and that's also second warmest for November on record. Now looking at the right-hand side of this particular slide, it's the same concept, but for the three-month period, September through November, which is the Northern Hemisphere autumn or the Southern Hemisphere spring. There are some similar patterns in the map. We see a large area of record warmest across parts of the Eastern and Central Pacific, parts of Africa, Europe and the Mediterranean, as well as portions of the Indian Ocean. And again, some few smaller pockets of cooler than average temperatures for this three-month period across the north central U.S. and just off the coast of Indonesia as well. Looking regionally, we saw that South American Hawaiian region had their warmest three-month period on record, and it was the top three warm September through November for both Europe and Africa. Looking at the globe as a whole, the global land and ocean average or departure from average was 0.94 degrees Celsius, which is 1.69 degrees Fahrenheit from the long-term mean, and that translates to the second warmest September to November on record behind 2015 again. Global land only was 1.36 degrees Celsius or 2.45 degrees Fahrenheit from the average, which is second warmest for this three-month period, and global ocean only was 0.78 degrees Celsius or 1.4 degrees Fahrenheit from the mean, and that also was second warmest September to November on record. All right, turning our attention now to slide three. We'll take a look here at the year-to-date or January to November global temperature departures. Again, the same map, same concept, but slightly different patterns. First, I wanted to note that there are larger areas of record warmest south of Alaska, as well as including Alaska, over portions of Mexico, South America, large area over Central and Southern Africa, as well as quite a bit of the Western Indian Ocean, Europe, Central Russia, and portions of Australia and New Zealand. Looking at this regionally, South America, Asia, Oceania, and the Hawaiian region were second warmest for this 11-month period. Europe, Africa, and the Gulf of Mexico region ranked third warmest for January to November. Combining everything and looking at the overall global temperature departure, it was 0.94 degrees Celsius or 1.69 degrees Fahrenheit from the long-term mean. That is the second warmest January to November period on record behind 2016. Global land only was 1.39 degrees Celsius or 2.50 degrees Fahrenheit from the mean, which is the third warmest January to November. And oceans only, it was 0.77 degrees Celsius above or 1.39 degrees Fahrenheit above the mean, which is second warmest. And looking at our ranks probability and our Haywood plot at the bottom of this slide, we see that 2019 is squarely riding the second place wave, 11 laps into a 12-lap annual race, if you will. 2016 is the year of record to beat, and it's virtually certain that 2019 will end among the five warmest years on record, and we put a 95% confidence interval around a second to third warmest year on record with a higher likelihood of it being second warmest year after December concludes. All right, turning our attention now to the U.S. or the United States on slide number four. We see that for November, the average temperature was 41.2 degrees Fahrenheit, which was about a half a degree Fahrenheit below the long-term mean, and this equates to about a near average month. Precipitation-wise, we received on average 1.86 inches, which was 0.37 inches below the long-term mean, and this is also a below average month. Looking at the map on the left, we see our temperature percentiles color-coded, and we see ranks superimposed on top of each of the states. It was warm across the west and the southwest and cool across the central and eastern U.S. California ranked 10th warmest for November, and Vermont ranked 9th coolest, Mississippi 10th coolest, both Indiana and Kentucky ranked 11th coolest, and Arkansas and Michigan ranked 13th coolest for the month. Looking at the precipitation percentiles map on the right, we see that it was dry across the west and the Pacific Northwest, portions of the Central Plains, the Central Gulf, the Ohio and Mid-Atlantic, as well as portions of the Northeast. Washington and Idaho had their fifth driest November. Oregon had its seventh driest. And then in the south, across the Southwest, Arizona had its third wettest November, New Mexico fifth wettest. And this was primarily due to large rainfall that fell as the result of tropical storm Raymond came on shore across the Southwest. All right, turning our attention now to slide five, We're looking at the autumn or September to November period for the U.S., and we see that the average temperature was 53.9 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 0.4 degrees Fahrenheit above the long-term mean. This is a near average three-month period for autumn. And in precipitation, we averaged 7.46 inches, which is a little more than a half an inch above average. And for the U.S. as a whole, it's an above-average three-month period in autumn. Looking at the map on the left, the temperature percentiles map, we see that it was cool across the northwest and the northern Rockies and plains and parts of the central U.S. And then it was warm across California, portions of the southern tier of the U.S., the southeast, and up through the mid-Atlantic. Florida ranked fifth warmest for September to November, and Georgia ranked sixth warmest. Turning our attention to the precipitation percentiles map on the right-hand side of the screen, we noticed that it was quite wet in the northern tier of the U.S., across the southwest, the Mississippi Valley, and across the northeast. North Dakota, Minnesota, and Wisconsin each ranked wettest September to November on record, and it was dry across the west and Pacific Northwest, the central portion of the U.S., Ohio, portions of the Mid-Atlantic, and Florida. And Florida, in fact, ranked 13th driest for this autumn period. All right, now looking at slide 6, we'll take a look at the year-to-date or January to November temperature and precipitation conditions across the contiguous U.S. We see that the average temperature was 54.2 degrees Fahrenheit or 0.4 degrees above the long-term average, which equates to a near average year-to-date period. Precipitation-wise, we received 32.14 inches, which is 4.55 inches above the long-term mean, which is equivalent to our wettest year on record out of the 125-year period. Looking at the temperature percentiles map on the left-hand side, we see that it was cool across the northern portion of the U.S. as well as central portion of the plains, and it was warm across the California and the south, and really warm across the southeast and mid-Atlantic up into New England. South Dakota ranked ninth coldest for January to November, and both Florida and Georgia ranked warmest on record, with South Carolina, North Carolina, and Virginia a close second. Looking at the precipitation percentiles map on the right, it was wet across quite a bit of the west, the plains, the Mississippi Valley, into the Great Lakes, Ohio Valley, and into the northeast. As you can see, North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan each ranked wettest for January to November. It was dry in the across the state of Washington as well as the extreme portions of the southeast, and Washington ranked eighth driest for January to November. All right, taking a look at slide number 7, I wanted to highlight what's been happening in Alaska through the first 11 months of this year. They've been quite warm fairly consistently. Their average temperature for January to November was 34.5 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 6.5 degrees above their long-term average. This is their warmest January to November on record. 2016 was a little bit cooler through November. Looking at their temperature percentiles, the map that's on the left, you see quite a bit of the dark red shading. That means all of those grid boxes, the January to November period in 2019 was record warmest, which covers quite a bit of the state. If you want to compare to the map on the right, which is the temperature departure from average, most of the equivalent departures range between 2 and about 8 degrees Fahrenheit. The further west you go, you see that the departures increase significantly. And lastly, on slide number 8, we'll look at our current U.S. drought monitor map, which was released this morning. About 12.6% of the contiguous U.S. was in drought. This is down approximately 3 percentage points since early November. We see drought in the map across the Pacific Northwest, the Four Corners region, parts of the Central Plains, parts of Texas, and parts of Florida in the southeast. Over the last 4 weeks, we saw improvements across parts of the southwest, Texas, and the southeast, where drought was more widespread. We saw degradation or intensification of drought in the last 4 weeks over parts of the Pacific Northwest and the Central Plains. Outside of the contiguous U.S., we see that drought improved across the Alaskan Panhandle and expanded or intensified across parts of Hawaii and Puerto Rico. And with that, I will turn it over to Eric.
Thank you. So I wanted to talk to you today about the 2019 NOAA hurricane season and how it shaped up. The first slide, on slide 9, is a picture of Hurricane Dorian approaching peak intensity as it approaches the Bahamas. It ended up as the strongest hurricane that we know of in the Bahamas, with a maximum winds of 185 miles per hour, and it's the second strongest hurricane that we know of anywhere in the Atlantic Basin, kind of the highlight of the hurricane season. So going to slide 10, NOAA issues two hurricane outlooks in the Atlantic Basin. The preseason outlook on the right was issued May 23rd, and then we update the outlook on August 8th. Usually the first part of hurricane season is quiet, and over 90% of the activity occurs after August 1st. That's why there's a late update. The first outlook on May 23rd basically suggested the most likely chance was for near normal season, but it was very close to a climatological forecast. And if you switch, in August, we updated the forecast to show the highest probability of an above-normal season occurring. And that's because the El Nino in the Pacific was much less likely to occur, and we didn't think it would have a suppressing effect on the hurricane season. Thus, we increased the probabilities in the above-normal category. And if you look at what actually occurred, 18 tropical storms, 18 named storms occurred, which is a little above our ranges in either the May or the August update. But for the number of hurricanes, major hurricanes, and ACE is accumulated cyclone energy. It's a measure of the strength and duration of the hurricanes. And in this particular season, 135 means it was 35% above the long-term median. So for most of these seasonal forecast parameters, the seasonal forecast was a success. Now, looking at the character of the season in slide 11, you'll see that we had lots of high latitude activity. A lot of storms formed north of the deep tropics and east of the United States. You'll also notice there's a fair bit of orange on that map. Orange is subtropical systems, systems that have characteristics of both tropical and extratropical systems. And the other thing to highlight is that there's very little activity in the western part of the basin in terms of strong activity. Near Puerto Rico, Dorian was a hurricane for just a brief amount of time east of Puerto Rico, and then Hurricane Barry was a hurricane right on the coast of Louisiana. There was less than 12 hours of hurricane activity in the western part of the basin. That's actually quite unusual, even though to have so many storms form in the Gulf is actually quite unusual. If they didn't get very strong, which is for the United States' benefit. And if you switch to slide 12, it's the busiest season on record that we know of with so few hurricane hours in those regions. So there was less than about 12 hours of hurricane time in the Caribbean or the Gulf of Mexico. Usually there's over 5 days. So it's remarkable that we got such a busy hurricane season on the strength of the activity that occurred mostly east of the Lesser Antilles and east of the United States. So just a quick look at why the hurricane activity formed where it did during the peak of hurricane season. So these are maps that show the shear and the sea surface temperature anomaly, SST, during August, September, and October of 2019. And this is a way that scientists gauge how favorable the conditions were for hurricane activity to form over the Atlantic Basin. So I want to point at the lower left, the anomaly chart. You can see that the orange, the cool, sorry, the warm colors mean there's low shear. Lower than average shear promotes the formation of tropical cyclones and hurricanes. And you can see that almost over the entire basin, there is low shear. Remarkably, remember I showed you there was very little hurricane activity in the Caribbean Sea or the Gulf of Mexico. The shear was near record low in the Gulf of Mexico. So the disturbances weren't able to take advantage of those generally conducive conditions. And if you look above it at the time series of the vertical wind shear, you can see that 2019 at the end of that, the black line at the end, is comparable to some very active hurricane seasons. You can see that 5.9 meter per second value is the same as 2005. But of course, in 2005, we had Hurricane Katrina. You go and look through this. 1985, we had five hurricanes hit the United States in that year. So you can get some very different hurricane seasons with similar climate conditions. Now, switching to the sea surface temperature anomalies on the right, it was warm basically everywhere except for the far north Atlantic and right off the coast of Africa. And if you look at the time series, so the time series is of that red box over the western Atlantic from 25 north to 40 north and then 42.5 to 80 west, that red box on the top right figure. One thing that really promoted the formation of the hurricane activity at high latitudes is the near record warm SSTs. In that box, it's basically comparable to any year in the modern era for SST records. And so it really promoted a lot of high latitude formations. We had two storms that were subtropical that formed over the higher latitudes, and a number of that transitioned from subtropical cyclones. And now I'll turn it over to Brad.
All right. Thank you, Eric. So moving to slide 14, update on the status of ENSO currently. First, upper left-hand corner are the average sea surface temperature anomalies during the past month. And the most notable feature throughout the global tropics has been ongoing very strong positive Indian Ocean dipole, which is characterized by positive sea surface temperature anomalies over the western Indian Ocean and below normal sea surface temperature anomalies over the eastern Indian Ocean. And that positive Indian Ocean dipole has resulted in the record heat across Australia and the rash of wildfires there. Moving to the Pacific Basin, near to above average sea surface temperatures continue throughout the equatorial Pacific Ocean. So currently, the oceanic and atmospheric observations reflect ENSO neutral conditions. In terms of the forecast, in the lower left-hand corner there, the gray bars represent forecast probabilities for ENSO neutral conditions. So you see the forecast from CPC IRI favoring ENSO neutral conditions to persist through the next 3 months, at close to a 70% chance, with ENSO neutral conditions remaining the most likely outcome through next summer. So next slide, number 15, is the monthly forecast, January, that was just issued this morning. Above normal temperatures are most likely to occur from the Pacific Northwest north to Alaska, with below normal temperatures slightly favored for parts of the northern tier of the continental U.S., especially northern plains to New England. You will notice a large area of equal chances for three categories, below, near, or above normal temperatures, and that's due to a expectation for a highly variable temperature pattern during the next month. Likewise, the precipitation outlook for January has a fairly large coverage of equal chances. Most likely area for above normal precipitation to occur would be the southeast and mid-Atlantic states, with below normal precipitation favored from the Pacific Northwest north to the Alaska Panhandle. Next slide, number 16, is the seasonal outlook covering January, February, March. Above normal temperatures are favored throughout the southern tier of the U.S. and also along the west coast north to Alaska, with below normal temperatures slightly favored for the northern plains, upper Mississippi Valley, and Great Lakes. And although above normal temperatures are favored across the southern tier and also western U.S., important to remember that we do expect a variable temperature pattern during this three-month time period with episodic cold events during the winter season. Precipitation outlook during January, February, March calls for slight tilt in the odds for below normal precipitation for the Florida Peninsula, also parts of the southwestern United States, and above normal precipitation most likely to occur farther to the north from the northern Rockies, northern plains, east to the Great Lakes and Mid-Atlantic. And above normal precipitation is also favored for parts of Alaska. So the final slide here, number 17, the seasonal drought outlook, highest confidence due to heavy rainfall likely to occur this weekend would be for drought removal over the Florida Panhandle, southwest Georgia. Those areas expected to receive as much as 2 to 4 inches of rain during the next week. Drought conditions are forecast to vary over the southwest and central southern plains, although due to a drier time of year, drought conditions likely to persist over southwest Kansas, Oklahoma Panhandle, and western Oklahoma. And over the Pacific Northwest, currently, they do have ongoing heavy rain and high elevation snow, but despite that heavy precipitation that's occurring right now, persistence is the most likely outcome here, and that's partly due to the dry start to the wet season. As Karen showed earlier, November was a very dry month for Washington and Oregon. Currently, the snow water content over the Cascades is running 25 to 50% of normal for this time of year. And finally, Hawaiian Islands, drought removal is expected due to a wet time of year. And conversely, drought persistence most likely over Puerto Rico due to the drier time of year there. And that's all I have. I'll turn it back to John now.
All right. Thanks so much, Brad. Now's the time when we'll take specific questions from the call participants. Please be sure to identify who you would like to answer the question, if possible. Operator, could you please remind the call participants who they can ask or how they can ask a question, and then please queue up the first question.
Thank you. And at this time to ask your question, please press star 1. Please unmute your phone and record your name clearly at the prompt. To withdraw your request, please press star 2. One moment, please, for the first question. Once again, at this time to ask your question, please press star 1. One moment, please. Thank you for standing by. We are showing no questions.
All right. Thank you so much. If there are no questions, then I will wrap up the call. First, I'd like to thank all of our speakers for their time and for everyone else for participating in this conference call. I will end this by reminding you to mark your calendar for some upcoming releases. The release of 2019's annual U.S. climate statistics, as well as 2019's billion-dollar disasters, is scheduled for January 8th. The release of 2019's annual global climate statistics is scheduled for January 15th. Finally, an audio file of this call will be posted on the NOAA.gov Media Advisory site later today. And if you have any further informational needs or would like a copy of today's presentation slides, please email me at johns.jones-batman@noaa.gov. My contact information is also available at the top of the media advisory. This concludes today's call. Thanks so much.
Thank you. That does conclude today's conference. We do appreciate attending. You may disconnect at this time.